John plays music that I am familiar with.
You referred to that twice in the last few weeks.
I know. Have I stayed too long at the fair? I wanted the clowns to be constantly clever. Have I stayed too long at the fair? I wanted the music to play on forever. Have I stayed too long at the fair? You know, Shakespeare says, and so we bear those ills we have and fly to others we know not of, and thus our conscience doth make cowards of us all, and thus the native hue of resolution to change and to live our own life is sicklied o'er by the pale cast of thought, and enterprises of great pitch and motion with this regard their currents turn awry and lose the name of action. We stay in the sick thing that we've created because we're afraid to leave it. The first person I met on this retreat was a lady named Julie. I met her on Wednesday. She said, on Monday, I told my husband of 31 years, I don't want to be married to you anymore. I'd stay too long at the fair. She said, I'm a yoga teacher, and I taught this yoga retreat, honoring the wisdom of your heart, honoring the longing of your heart. And I realized that I had stayed way too long in this marriage that was loveless. And I had to honor my heart for the first time in my life, knowing that it would be ultimately a win for him. And my three daughters were bereft that mother would leave father. But she said, I did 31 years and my heart has done its job. And now I'm ready to live the life that I have abandoned. Do we have the courage to love ourselves, even if it means sometimes we step out of something that we have defined ourselves as? You know, beautiful Paul Fulford retired a week or so ago, and I told him, you know, it's not really retirement, it's rewirement. So what if we could think of our lives as stepping into a new door? One door closes, but truly another opens. And the invitation is always there to live the examined life. Who was it that said the unexamined life isn't worth living? So yeah, we get to come here and to explore, am I really living this life to the fullest capacity? Am I honoring my soul? When I was young like you, I remember Shakespeare said, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night, the day, thou canst not be false to anyone. And so as a young person, I said, I have to be true to this life form, not live my mother's version of my life or my father's version of life or society's version, but there is something that is longing to live this life, and let's call it our true nature, our soul. And my stint in the Christian church, you could say, all boiled down to one question. And they talked about the meditations are the questions. So if you can live the question without the tyranny of having to find an answer, and don't ask me for your answers, don't ask the world for the answer, but to live in the question. And the Bible says, what does it profit man if he gains the whole world and loses the most precious thing that he or she has, which is our soul? So if you can inquire into that and discover what that soul is, it's the aliveness in you. And you know what I discovered on the first day of the retreat? They say your vulnerability is your aliveness. So who wants to go into vulnerability as a way of life? I told Glory G, it feels like the new norm now. I cry at the drop of a hat. I live in this vulnerable place where everything is so tender to my heart. And in a strange sort of way, I don't want to go into that numb place anymore. I don't want to seek out those distractions that protect me and are addictive patterns in every way. I want to live so present and so alive that everything becomes sacred. Matt Licata was the Jungian therapist on this retreat. Jeff Foster was the direct experience of someone who had to go into the dark night of the soul and come out speaking this poetry that I read to you. And they complemented one another beautifully. Along the way on this retreat, people ask for techniques or tools to put in their toolkit. So Matt, being the Jungian therapist, decided to give everybody a little tool. So I thought maybe some of you out there who take notes would want one. So this was Matt's tool. Brenda will appreciate this. It was the word RAIN, R-A-I-N. And R stands for recognize. Recognize what is arising in you. That is your meditation, to recognize what is arising and not abandon what is arising. Now, you may say it's fear, you may say it's sadness, you may say it's anger. And the key with that, recognizing it, is meet it with intimacy, but don't fuse yourself in it by linking it to a story. And you know what I mean. The story can get you going on and on and on, as they say in the South, when in truth, you're just here to meet that little fearful part, that wounded part, that frightened part, and create space, a home in you. See, the mind wants to say, yeah, if you come here, you'll be done and I'll get rid of you. But the heart says, no, my darling, you can come anytime you want. And you're allowed. Jeff told the story of his dad with his Alzheimer's and how when he would see him and he would sit up in bed, his mind had gone, but his heart was open wide and he'd sit and, it's you, he'd say. And he said, I felt love for my father for the first time in these encounters with him. The last time he went out to dinner, he went to the restaurant and the menu was provided. And he said, you know, he was British, so he loved tea and cake. He said, I think his whole life was cake. And he said, like a little boy in his 86 years old, I can order anything on the menu. He says, yeah, Dad, you can order anything on the menu. And he said, I would spend hours just massaging his swollen feet and feeling so connected. And he says, and when my dad finally did make his transition, I had to go out to LA and sign the papers that you have to sign. And he said, I signed the wrong line. And then I felt that little part of me saying, oh, you screwed up again. And this little part of me that was the shamed kid was there. Can't even do that right. You can't even sign the right line. So he says, I took my little shamed kid out to the ocean and we went swimming together. And I said, you know, I know you screwed up, but I still love you. And you have a space in me to be accepted. So recognize it when shame comes up. It may be a shame from your childhood that's coming up into a 50-year-old body. And it's not meant to be rejected or abandoned anymore, but to be loved. So the first thing is to recognize what is up for you. And the second is the A. And that is allow it. Just allow it. Allow it space to feel what it needs to feel. You know, if it's sadness, invite the sadness in. If it's loneliness, invite the loneliness in. You don't have to create a story around it, but to just allow it space in you. And then the I could be several things. I like the word integrate, because once these abandoned little children, he called them little children, once we create space in our heart for them, they get to be integrated. So I can go through my little unworthy David can be there. At this retreat, I found that what I wanted to do was to run away. Every time the vulnerability would hit, I wanted to hide under a chair and run away. And so they said, your aliveness is there in the core of your vulnerability. Inquire into that. So I'm sitting with my little journal and I'm courageously trying to go into the core of this vulnerability. And I flashed on being 4 years old and going to a movie with my aunt. And we went to see Hansel and Gretel. And I have a twin sister. So here's my twin sister and I sitting in the movie theater. Hansel and Gretel are on the screen. I think it was a cartoon version. But at four, I couldn't separate the myth from reality. And so when Hansel and Gretel went into the forest, I can still see it. And they dropped the breadcrumbs. And the bird ate the breadcrumbs. And then they ended up with the witch and she was going to throw them in the oven. I was so scared. I was under the chair. That's the way I felt at this retreat. I was that four-year-old again, wanting to hide under a chair. I wanted to get away from everybody because it wasn't a safe place to be vulnerable. My aunt said, grow up. It's just a cartoon. At four, I couldn't separate. I believed in the tooth fairy. I mean, they lied to you. Let's face it. They lied about Santa. They lied about the tooth fairy. All of that was lies. I know. Yeah, and somehow you have to be able to discern which one were the lies and which ones were the truths. Did Adam and Eve ever exist? Even that is a lie. But you know, when you know it's a lie, it sets you free. There's this wonderful woman I met there, and she said, I was raised in the Mormon tradition. And at some stage, I realized I was betrayed by my religion of origin. So what if we get to be betrayed in order to wake up? Have I stayed too long at the fair? And whatever that means. So the I is integration. You can also say it's inquiry, to inquire, what is this really showing me? How can this be here for me? You can also say I could be imagination. Could we allow our imagination and those imaginal realms take us? They would say to you, life is painting the picture of your life right now as you're sitting there. How is life painting that picture? Because we get to say, if we want it to be a beautiful, Tia knows this, we're the artist. And we get to decide how this painting of our life's going to look. And so that's recognition, allowing, integration, inquiry, imagination. And then the N is nurturing. We're here to be gentle with ourselves. We're here to nurture ourselves. We're here to love ourselves, to be kind and gentle with ourselves at whatever stage you find yourself in life. We're not here to shame ourselves and whip us into shape. We have these wonderful, we were talking about the ego. And we all have these incredible little things that are trying to protect us in life. The ego, the personality. Could we befriend that part of ourselves that somehow we regard as something we should get rid of, so that we get to do a dance with this part of ourself that's always there? Huh. Then there's this intimacy, this nurturing that gets deeper with time and doesn't have to go anywhere. They quoted some famous people while I was there, like Pema Chodron. And Pema Chodron, they said, what's the skinny of your teachings? Pema Chodron says, become aware of your thoughts and feel your feelings. Huh. So they talked about thought as the nature of mind, and to not believe your thoughts, but to notice that thought arises in this beautiful space, which is our true nature, which is this field of awareness. So they use metaphor a lot. They would talk about the sky of mind, which is this field of awareness, is what we are. And in that sky of mind arise these thoughts, and that's what they do. So don't fight the thought, don't resist the thought, don't follow the thought. They're just moving through the mind. So let the mind be the mind. Huh. And in the middle of that, invite your heart to embrace whatever it is that it's feeling. If it's sadness, if it's grief, it's pain, if it's anger, if it's anxiety. And in that, we're strangely enough integrating ourselves. They talked about Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning. He survived the concentration camps, and he made a little statement. He said, between every stimulus and response in us, there is a space. And he says, how we use that space determines whether we are free or not. Between every stimulus and response, there is a space. And how we use that space determines whether we're free or not. Now let those who have ears to hear, hear. So instead of running away from something, instead of reacting to something, instead of resisting something, which is where all suffering arises, what if in a strange, paradoxical way we could give thanks? Give thanks for the very thing that's creating that trigger in us. And then the potential is that in that dark place, in that contraction, that's where the light comes through. That's where the awareness comes through. That's where the forgiveness and the surrender come through. You know, that's where the livingness comes through. I don't know what I was going to talk about today, but I think I'm doing okay. Yeah. So I did the rain thing. The Jungian therapist said sometimes it's important to separate ourselves from an emotion. So we've taught many classes here. We talk about the balcony. In the balcony, you can sit there and you can look at your local self. David can look at little David as he's going through some kind of painful thing. And in that separation of ourselves from this direct, unbearable pain, we have that space to meet it with an objective kind of acceptance, instead of getting entangled, enmeshed, and swept away or drowning in the pain. I'm going to give you a little taste of Jeff Foster. He talks about the silence. And in meditation, if you allow everything to be there, every sound, you'll realize that every sound, every thought is arising in this beautiful silence that we are. One of the consequences of this heart experience that I had was I don't have any preference anymore. I feel like I'm living in this beautiful, vast, empty space, and it's always there, and it was always there, but now I'm finally feeling it. And it feels like somebody died, and I don't know who is here anymore, but I do know that whatever life is left, it is so grateful for every single moment, for every single day, that I don't want to miss anything. You know, I was walking the dogs up on the mountain this week when I got back, and my old dog, Bert, collapsed. This is the second time he's collapsed. And I found myself just lying down next to him on the trail and saying, if you're going to go now, you can go, you know. I saw this pretty girl walking. I says, can you call my dog? Because sometimes he's distracted by pretty girls, and he might get up. She said, what? You know, you'd do anything if your dog collapses on the trail. In meditation, he says, do not try to silence the sounds in your mind or all around you to get rid of them. Also, do not ignore them. He says, stay right in the center. Be the unconditionally receptive awareness. That's what we are, that space of awareness in which all sounds, pleasant and unpleasant and neutral, can come and go. Be open to all the sounds that are near or far, loud or soft, and allow them all to arrive and stay for as long as they need to stay and leave when they are ready. So it's a nonviolent approach to your meditation. I thought what was so fascinating was they would always do these guided meditations. There wasn't these long, long periods of silence. You know, I've done many Ajahshanti retreats, and they say it's all silence. You eat silently. You can't make eye contact. And I much prefer this way of approaching the meditation, because they said all of it's meditation. The meditation is the question that you're asking your soul, and to rest in that question. So he says, notice how sounds arise on their own. They stay for a while. This is like thoughts as well. And they dissolve in their own time, at their own pace. Sounds are only obeying their own nature. They're being themselves perfectly, walking on their own path, as all things are. So then we're not strategizing how to get rid of the thought or how to get rid of the sound, but we're creating space for everything to arise. If a particular sound is distracting to you, or annoying you, or bothering you, wonderful. Wow. Just notice that annoyance, that irritation, that frustration, that disappointment, and allow it to be there. It's more grist for the mill. So they say, get really curious with what is arising within you and drown it with your own fascination. Oh my God, there's that little boy wanting to escape and hide under the chairs again. Where did he come from? The truth is, he never went away. We had at one time at the center here, we had kind of a contentious board. And Tia was on the board at that time. And when it got really unbearable for me, I would try to hide, remember? I would try to run away. He was showing up all the time, that kid. Anyway, notice it's not the sound itself that's creating the annoyance. It's the mind's resistance to the sound. The mind's insistent that the sound shouldn't be there. Isn't this resistance noisier than the sound or the thoughts itself? Trey has real sensitivity to sound. And every now and then we'll have a barking dog that lives down the street who decides to bark throughout the evening. And it drives him crazy. I'm just saying. What kind of silence would try to silence a sound? Anyway, he says, true silence is not the opposite of noise. That is the mind's version of silence, with its obsession with opposites and contrasts and dualities. True silence allows all sounds, all thoughts to come and go. It is that field of spacious awareness in which even the mind's endless chattering has a home. This loving, all-inclusive silence is what you are. And it is the natural silence of your own heart. They stress the heart all the time. The heart is the center of awareness, a heart-based spirituality, because the heart knows oneness. The heart isn't going to say to your little shamed, abandoned child, get out of here, there's no room. Your heart's going to say, honey, anytime you need to come, there's space for you here. You know, if you need to feel vulnerable, I'm here for you. So don't try to silence your thoughts or your feelings. Don't disturb their precious peace. Don't get in their way or make it unsafe for them to move. Simply know yourself as this deep meditative stillness in which all thoughts and feelings are allowed to come and go, the unconditional acceptance of your own present experience, the deepest sorrow, the deepest joy. Allow them all to flow in and out of your precious, big, global heart. At one stage, they said, you know, none of this is personal. And it was like, I think, the third or fourth day into this retreat that I confessed. There were maybe 100 people there. I said, in full disclosure, I have to tell you folks that I had a heart attack 3 weeks and 5 days ago. And all your talk has been about the heart, listening, not abandoning your heart, listen to the longing of your heart, go into the core of your vulnerability. And I said, it's been extremely painful. But what I discovered was it wasn't my heart that I was experiencing. I was experiencing the heart of the universe. And everybody's pain was felt in that heart. And let me tell you, there was a lot of pain there. And people weren't running away from their pain. They were sharing it. And when the pain is given a space to be felt and loved and nurtured, then it no longer sabotages your life. Then in a paradoxical way, it takes you home, home to a place that you've always been. I'll give you one last little taste of him. For those of you who are in the old-fashioned religion, this is what he would say to you. Don't worship a bearded old man in the sky or a graven image in a book. Worship the in-breath and the out-breath and the winter breeze caressing your face and the morning rush on a subway train, the simple feeling of being alive and never knowing what is to come. See God in the eyes of a stranger, heaven in the broken and the ordinary. Worship the ground on which you stand and make each day a dance with tears in your eyes as you behold the divine in every moment and you see the absolute in all things relative, and let them call you crazy. You know, it doesn't mean you're not going to still have a crazy mind, but you know, the open heart can endure crazy. I asked Trey once about, I said, do you notice those voices in your head, Trey? And he says, I love the voices in my head. Well, so we can still have an open heart and still have a lot of crazy thoughts. Isn't that great to know? So he talks about a new spirituality that the planet desperately needs right now. And he says, we'd like to introduce ourselves. We are a new generation here of spiritual inquirers. We no longer require secondhand answers from your priest or your rabbi or from some authority outside yourself. We no longer require secondhand answers. We no longer blame others for our suffering. Our spirituality goes beyond cosmic guilt and punishment and the us and them thinking. We no longer cling to holy books, for in truth, all books are holy. We don't kill over truth, for truth is all around. We are willing to fearlessly face present experience without conclusions and without prejudice, naked as the day we were born and open to what comes. Wow. Can you imagine a world where we did this? Where we stopped making it them and us, right and wrong, your religion versus my religion, where we saw it as a God of love, that all people are sacred. We no longer are waiting for life or some divine revelation in the future, for we see life in everything, including the waiting for life, and God is in all that we once rejected. We no longer dream of escape, of some perfect place in the sweet by and by called heaven, for we have relaxed into uncertainty, and doubt is our old friend, and not knowing is our dearly beloved, and imperfection is deeply holy to us now. You know, there is a saying in the Bible that says, could my perfect love my own imperfect? Could we embrace the imperfect aspects of ourselves? The body is included. Mind is not your enemy. Feelings are sacred. Sexuality is celebrated, dare I say, and we love the mess of being human. And we finally understand that wisdom and compassion, the absolute and the relative, duality and non-duality, transcendence and immanence, personal and impersonal, human and divine, were never divided at all. That it's all God and it's all here for us. So come down from heaven and get into this earthly experience and have faith in each other. Because the one needed to experience itself, that's why it created you and me, to have this beautiful dance. You know, and it's kind of messy and sticky, and maybe there's tears along the way. But my God, you're alive. Isn't that amazing? You have this morning. You're alive. What are you going to do with the life that you've been given? They ask that again and again. What are you going to do with the life that you've been given? You know, could we find the blessings right here? I mean, I personally know that in an instant, you could fall on the trail of life, and it could be it. I mean, that's, as Tia said, the antidote to life is death. So when death becomes a reality, then life gets even stronger, because then life is more precious than it's ever been. And I just feel all this love in this room. It's just amazing. And I'm not taking it personally, because there's only one here. loving itself, revealing itself yet again in a sweet, powerful, authentic, vulnerable way. So thank you for being here on my 1-month, 2-day journey into life.